Welcome to the Data Able podcast, where Dave Mathias and Matt Jesser dive into data. Each week, they cover the culture, knowledge, and practices that successful organizations, leaders, and individuals use to get value out of data.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Data Able podcast. I'm right here at IO. I'm sitting in this park. Lucky to sit down with Nadi Bremer, and she's was presenting yesterday. Awesome talk, and she presented earlier this week at the Twin Cities Data Visualization Group. Again, another awesome session. Welcome, Nadi.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Yes, now you are well known in the data visualization space, but you want to talk a little bit about what you talked at IO, and maybe it was an extension on what you also covered at the Twin Cities Data Viz Group, and tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so my talk at I.O. was called Visualizing Connections, and that's basically what the talk was about as well. So I started noticing when I wanted to create a new talk about, like, I wanted to do something about the design process of some of my projects, and I noticed that a lot of my recent bigger projects could actually be seen as revealing connections and different kinds of connections. So there were connections that are like family ties, a gigantic family network, but there are also connections in cultures for UNESCO, where I did something about revealing the connections between intangible cultural heritage, and there were connections in a hierarchy of how a system, an operating system, was working. And so I collected six of these examples and then wanted to explain how the connections part of each project, visualizing the underlying intricacies of these complex systems, how I went about doing that. Just starting from the initial idea, iterating through different options, figuring out why in some cases something didn't work, and in other cases another approach did work. To give this general concept of that everything you need a very like custom and creative and iterative approach to handle complex data in a way. And during the meetup, I specifically talked about one of these projects. So the IO talk was like six of them, and the Twin Cities one was like one of them.
Yes, and what was amazing is just even that one of them, how much effort you put in that whole process. Could you, thinking about that process, and are you a person that's always sort of been a person that's, because I look at it as a perfection, like, you know, nothing's ever perfect. Everything can always get better. But it's clearly you're really passionate about making this as perfect as possible, because you went through dozens and dozens of different designs to get to where you wanted it to be. Were you always like that, or how did that process come about for you?
Yeah, so I've always been a perfectionist, even from like a child, where I'd crumple up my papers when I couldn't draw something as how I wanted it to draw, like as an 8-year-old. So the process is more that it came, you know, figuring out when something I was happy with something is that took actually just years to figure out for myself. In that sense, it's like the spark joy thing that everybody's talking about now. For me, it's like more of a reverse thing. It's when I don't feel like this negative thing anymore, when that's out of the way. And I'm much more in tune these days to figuring out when I'm okay with it. There are those very few cases where I'm like, actually, like, oh my God, I'm actually really happy with what I just made. But those typically only come about from bugs, that something went wrong and went surprisingly very well wrong in a way that I hadn't expected it. So I'm surprised by what the computer screen is showing back at me, and then I can be like happily surprised and be like, oh, this is exactly what I didn't know I was looking for.
Those pleasant surprises.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, so like you're talking about connections, and one thing you talked about in your talk, and maybe we dive into that a little bit, because you're a former astronomer I'm a former organic chemist. I think we're always impacted by that as our careers go on, and like things will always go into, you know, what we are now, what we did in the past. So, but I can see that in your work, and obviously not just from the things that are constellation related type.
Yes.
Data visualization, but there's clearly sort of like that astronomer, that sort of space-esque. Talk a little bit more how that has helped you in your career, and how you made that even that switch also from astronomer to now so passionate in data visualization.
Right. Yeah. So I graduated as an astronomer, but I was totally, I was really sure that I didn't want to continue in that direction. I just wanted something that was more diverse and also a little bit more tangible back on Earth instead of in the stars. So I became a data scientist for Deloitte Consulting. They were at that time this, you know, data scientist, the word didn't even exist in the Netherlands then. They were setting up the analytics team. So that was really fun to be, I mean, within the Deloitte team, to be at the forefront of what we were doing with analytics and figuring that out. And I really enjoyed that, learning all of these techniques. And instead of having my programming things to do, something with the simulation of stars, doing that about what people were buying or other, I really like doing like customer analytics. But over the course of like the 4 years that I was seeing myself as a data scientist, by the end of that, I started noticing that I basically lost a bit of my passion to work on these models. It's like, I felt like, ah, another predictive model, ah, another customer segmentation. And I hadn't realized that, but I was doing like visualizations of data, because as an external party, we often had to do presentations at the clients. I mean, they were paying a lot of money, so they wanted to see something from that. And these, as the slide decks, they always involved kind of like charts and things, always making tons of those. And as the algorithms that I was doing were getting more complex, the visualizations that I was showing the insights with were also getting more complex. So starting out with the bar charts, but eventually going on to like networks to show association analyses and like hexagonal heat maps. Like, that's not sure if you could say that it's complex, but it was at least something else than bar charts and line charts. And I went to a conference on data science in Barcelona, and there was Mike Freeman, who's now a great professor in Washington, I believe. He was giving a talk, and he called himself, on his first slide, a data visualization specialist. And when I saw that, I was like hit by lightning. It's like, my God, you can just do data visualization. That's a thing. And then from that moment on, I just knew that that was exactly where my passion was. That's where I wanted to do more. So I started, in my free time, I started reading books about best practices. I'd been already picking up D3 a little bit to do some of these more complex visuals. But at that point in time, I thought of all kinds of personal projects to do for myself, such as one about exoplanets, because, yeah, astronomer. But also one about phone switching and other things and music. So in my evenings and weekends, I would like teach myself how to make these visuals and try and find how I would enjoy making the visuals, like more from a little bit more from a creative angle. And that's kind of how I turned around after 4 years. In about a year time, I switched from data science to data viz specialist more, in a sense.
Awesome. And so now you've been doing this a few years, and you seem to have that same passion that you had before. So it's continued, and you know this is the thing you like to do, and you're working on even a book in this area. If you want to tell a little bit about what that book is that you're working on.
So the book is about a big collaborative project that I've done about a year ago. So the project was called Data Sketches. And I did this together with Shirley Wu, who is a DataViz freelancer in San Francisco. And we had met up at a conference called OpenViz, one of the best DataViz conferences. And we had a good time. And afterwards, we started sort of remaining in contact through Slack channels and such. And at some point, we started sort of thinking, well, just generally chatting. And we were both unhappy by the output that we'd had in the previous year. We hadn't really done that many sort of personal projects. And suddenly she kind of asks me, like, wait, well, we want to collaborate on a big project then, so that we force ourselves to do projects. And I was like, yes, totally yes. So we set up Data Sketches. And the concept was that every month we would pick a topic, and then both of us would create like an elaborate data visualization about that topic. But we were completely free then. So it was the first month had the topic of movies. And for me, I was thinking first I wanted to do something with my favorite movie, but I don't really have that. So eventually I came to my favorite trilogy, which was Lord of the Rings. And then I was looking for data on Lord of the Rings, where Shirley has done something more about the top summer blockbuster movies for every year that she's been alive, and make that visual how these differ in terms of IMDb ratings and genres and age ratings. And so it's completely like we start from the same topic, but because we're two different people, we end up with two completely different things. And in the meantime, we would really we would be like in close contact, giving feedback, sharing ideas, just having fun in creating this. So it's like it was collaborative in a non-standard way. And then after each of these months, we would write a really long write-up about everything that we've been through, from the first horrible screenshot to the thing that we finally published. And the book is basically a collection of all of these write-ups with things that have never appeared online, and lessons that we learned, such as the different ways you can find data that we sort of learned throughout this project, and everything just nicely combined, having nice visuals. So that's kind of how the book.
Awesome. Because so last year, and I'm forgetting her name right now, but one of the Dear Data authors was here.
Georgia or Stephanie?
Georgia was here, mm-hmm. Yes. And at IO Festival, and certainly like Dear Data, now obviously different in the sense that they did handwritten and was like a weekly tracking their own data. It's really getting more personalized with data, and this is like a different take on it. But yeah, that sort of resonates because I think people feel like, you know, some of these things are sort of abstract, or they feel like they're just doing it for work.
Yeah,
you know, that's where data visualization is, but there can be a lot more there. What's maybe a project that you've worked on where it's been the most painful, more of a struggle in that project, and where you almost feel like, you know, maybe what failure did you learn from in that project? And not necessarily it's a failed project, but we have failures in everything we do.
Right. I mean, there are the projects where you feel like you've handed it over to the client and then it doesn't land anywhere. And being a freelancer, I don't have the option to necessarily carry it into the organization. I really sort of wrap a bow around it and hope it turns out all right. So those are the things that I'm sad about. Although there are thankfully also projects where they do tell me that it's been incorporated and they're happy with how they're using it. I guess what I basically have in every project, but maybe one project more than another, was actually one of the data sketches projects where I was making a visualization about Cardcaptor Sakura, which is a manga which I read during my childhood, and I had this very fancy idea in my head of how I wanted lines to run between the different data points that I had captured for this data set, and I spent about 10 hours trying to make the lines work, and then they were kind of working, but I wasn't happy with them, quite happy. But I just set it aside, and it's still this feeling of like, this is not quite right, but I don't know what I want to do. So I kept working on other aspects of the data, like making a second ring. There was an inner ring, and then there was a second ring, and then there were lines between that. And only after working for a while and seeing how I wanted to do the easier parts and figure out the style for that, did I finally get to a point like, aha, this, okay, now I clearly see that my lines are not the right style that I apparently have in mind for this project, because everything else is looking differently. And through that, it actually showed me the style that I wanted to have, and then I completely changed the lines. Even though I'd spent 10 hours on those lines, I completely threw it away and rewrote it much easier also. So that was one of those moments again where at some point it's like, it's not right, it still doesn't feel right, and I have to keep on iterating, but maybe I'll just do something else in between and come back to it again. And that project had several things that eventually never made it to the final part. I wanted to do something with, because it's a manga, I just wanted to do something with CMYK dot printing. It took me about 5 hours to get that working in a way, but that took about 2 minutes to show on the screen. So that was, since it was an interactive project, I couldn't make that work. So eventually, again, those 5 hours appeared, were in the trash. And then there was another thing with the legend, where I created a legend, which was overly complicated. And I got some feedback from somebody who's like, well, why don't you just do it like this? So again, legend in the trash, make a new legend. So that project became almost twice as long with stuff that I never used. So that was pretty frustrating in the way that you it was a personal project, you're spending your evenings on it, and you could have done other stuff with those like 20-30 hours.
Does it get easier though as you go along, where you're just like, I know this is just a part of doing good work that I'm gonna have to throw stuff away? And because sometimes it's like, you know, or does it stay with you where it's frustrating you weeks later that you spent that time and like
I think if I'm eventually happy with the final result, I can put it away as being part of the process. Yes, but it's fun to, you know, anecdotally talk about.
Oh yeah, no, and it's good for people to understand that it's not like first time Nadi is doing this, no. And wow, it's amazing. Like everyone struggles,
yes,
in doing good work, and
yeah.
And I think sometimes people forget that because they only see
the final.
A lot of times the final good work. I
mean, yeah.
So. You know, we're at IO Festival this week. There's tons of great people talking, with not only in the side hallway conversations, but, you know, certainly on all the different sessions that are happening. There's dinners and other things, events.
Yep.
What have you sort of taken away from this event and things you've learned and things you're like, now I'm going to like spend some time in and dig into because I'm excited about it and like things?
Well, I mean, there were two talks about GANs. And the things that they showed, Helena and Mario Klingemann. So those two talks, I really liked what they showed and what you can do. So that kind of makes me want to maybe check out Gantz as well. Although I was in a discussion with Moritz Stefaner, as you know, who does amazing database work, and we were kind of brainstorming on how can we use this for data visualization, and we were both kind of like, well, I don't see how, but it's interesting. But we both couldn't quite figure out how data-viz-wise the Gantz would help us. But we were both, he has already played with it, but I haven't. Also, I saw Daniel Schiffman's talk from the code train, where he's basically live coded from start to finish something, and I really liked how he pulled all of this sort of straightforward tools from different places on the web that you can do machine learning with to do image recognition, and then put that into, and they made a little game about it. And again, that kind of idea of just using other parts that other people have created to maybe make something that was never intended for it in the first place. I do like that kind of creative approach by sort of taking something from one part and then implementing it and for your own thing. Just always having this sort of, I also do that with like data visualizations and charts. For example, chord diagrams. I've used chord diagrams in many different ways than it was the original intention, but trying to see it more in its abstract shape, and then if I can repurpose that in different ways. I like to do that to other parts as well, when I see, so I have like subscriptions to code drops and CodePen, these more general like CSS or design driven things, and I might see something that somebody was created like a loading button, and I really like the effect that's going on, and I might dig into the code and analyze it and eventually use it in one of my visuals.
Oh, that's cool. So, and yeah, where do you grab your ideas from? If you're going to say like what areas, like how do you try to keep things fresh and keep getting more, because that's the challenge. Then people think like, that person's like this, and the same stuff is coming out, and it's cool, great stuff, but you want to stay fresh as you really have that art component, that creative component. Yeah. How do you keep on keeping things fresh?
So I'm not totally sure if I have like a very good system. For one, I try to, I always, when I'm working for clients, I try and keep the, the client brand guidelines might have to have an impact. But also I think about the topic of the data, if that could have some sort of design aspect. I've done, you know, things about music visuals where I made things into tiny vinyls. And also at any moment when I'm browsing the web and I see something that inspires me, I save it and put it in one of my many Pinterest boards. So I curate these at all times. And right before I start designing on a project, I will go through some of these boards that I think would be relevant. And I'm keeping the goal of like what the visual should do and the data in mind. I kind of browse through them and see some of the things that kind of click with this sort of vaguely in the back of my mind. And I create like a client mood board. And that from those like images, which can be, some of them are database and some of them are totally different, like natural history or illustrations in general, I go through them and from that find inspiration and try and figure out why if I thought these clicked and why I think they would fit the current project. It's kind of, I'm really like remixing. So yeah. Getting inspiration from others and remixing that in my own way.
Awesome. Yeah, that's a great tip for folks. Yeah, I certainly like Evernote all the time. I'm using Evernote to just grab stuff. I'm like, I know this is going to be good somewhere else. I don't know when, but you want to grab it, right?
Exactly. And, an artist.
Yeah, exactly. We're all just repurposing other stuff in a new way, right? So when you're thinking about, you know, what is sort of next in your career, as your career is, you're young in your career, but like how do the next 5 years from now, where do you want to see yourself in, you know, what do you want to be doing?
So for me, I've thought about it, and I don't want to be like a studio on my own. I'm not interested in hiring anybody, but due to multiple reasons, one of them is that for data visualization, I haven't figured out how I can delegate parts of the creative process, because I don't know myself how a visual is going to turn out from the very moment that I start. Which I had a much more, I could, like when I was doing data science, that was much easier to give tasks to juniors. So what I see myself, what I've like slightly started doing, but not like full force yet, is more of having a team where I subcontract other people And then together as a team, and then I might be more of the art director. So I will still focus on the data viz side, but maybe the project is bigger than that. And I might hire an animator or a UI person or front-end people, and together we create something like a bigger project. That is something that I would like to see myself explore more in the coming years. And, you know, working for the brands that I've admired in the past, or like I would still like to be in National Geographic or Wired. I would still love to do a big project for the World Wildlife Fund or NASA, naturally, or ESA. That idea of both growing in terms of the clients that I get to work with and the projects that I get to do is how I hope to see myself moving further in the next years.
What, speaking of clients and how that happens, what inspires you most when a company comes in and approaches you? What inspires you in that process where, you know, I mean, certainly there's a brand that you may aspire with, but like working with that client, how does that work? Like a good client relationship versus a not so good client relationship?
I guess I in client relationships, I'm very much a back and forth person. So there will be lots of email contacts. Also, when I'm creating something, I will have like every 3 days, I'll send you an email with the updates that just came by. And I guess a good client relationship for me happens, let me think about that. I guess when they're very open, they're not trying to hide anything, but also that they understand the responsibilities. So some clients, they send me the data in giant PDFs and other things, and I have to basically scrape or figure out how it's kind of constructed myself. Whereas I feel like I clearly at the start say that you are responsible for the data, because I don't want to make any errors in setting up, or if I still have to do analyses on the data. Sure, I always have to do some data preparation, but it's usually just kind of moving it into a different shape. And when I feel like the client doesn't want to put in the effort to do that, that's kind of like a red flag for how the rest is going to work. You know, if you have clients who are very enthusiastic from the very start and they're very open for new ideas, that's going to be a great project. I mean, I can try out new things, and usually these new things will eventually pan out as the right projects. But the other ones, when I guess the clients are. So, you know, part of them is like when they see my site and they see my projects, they're like, oh, we want something like that as well. But once you start working with them, they are kind of scared to take that step outside of the box of things that they know. Those are the tougher projects.
Makes perfect sense. And you've obviously had a lot of experience working with companies when young in your career with Deloitte, but then you moved into this freelancing space. And how hard was it to transition in that process from being a consultant at Deloitte for a number of years and obviously in straight data science realm versus this more creative, you know, data visualization space where you're somewhat of a perfectionist and you're wanting to make sure you're putting out good work. Yeah. How hard was that for the transition?
So I feel like the things that I was doing at Deloitte really helped me actually prepare as a freelancer. For the one hand, the whole concept of having a different client every few weeks or maybe multiple things at once, and having to become an expert in their data set, hopefully as soon as possible. Plus also this idea of, as a consultant, you always need to kind of, even as a junior, when you go into the company, you are a face of the company, so you need to kind of sell yourself as the company. And in a way, I feel it helped me make it easier to talk to clients, because I was always somewhere else talking to new people every few weeks, meeting new people. But I guess the difference that within the freelancing is that I'm now responsible for the whole part of the project. So I can no longer rely on a manager to do the actual sales part for me. So those very first initial meetings, you know, when you have to first call with a client, that's not my strong point.
It's not what you enjoy the most.
No.
And I hope not. You want to be, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm learning. Yeah, I'm not. It's not my thing to keep a conversation going in that very first early moments of getting to know each other. So that can sometimes be very awkward if the other person is also more of an introvert. So the selling part, and also, you know, figuring out the prices is just such a pain in figuring out how long things will take. But yeah, the freelancing is, though, once you once you start, you kind of need to keep on going. So you need to make something work. When you get your first project, you need to figure out a contract. So you go about and do it. Yeah. You have to do it. Otherwise, you can't keep on freelancing. So strangely enough, I feel like Deloitte has actually helped me a lot in being able to become a freelancer. Mm-hmm. Just this sort of consulting mindset.
Oh, makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I mean, obviously, they make good consultants out of it, and that take a lot of those skills. And despite you not liking the sales part, and no one likes that part, right?
There is a part where as a data scientist at Deloitte, there were parts of the business that were not happy to see us necessarily, because maybe we would automate things away, or they weren't the party that was involved, but their manager said that we came by and they need to help us. Whereas now, as a freelancer, I work much closer to the client, and that actually, for which I'm making it in a way.
Yeah, they brought you in, they want you there. Yeah,
yeah, so that's, it makes it easier. Yeah, so that is very different. That feeling of not being wanted is now kind of gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. So now, if you're going to tell somebody else, they're a young person, they're in school, let's say they're high school or college, and they're wanting to get into this space, what tips would you have for them to say get into that data visualization space?
Right. I first would tell them to try and figure out what kind of data viz do they like. Do they like making more dashboard related things, or do they like making more stories and data journalism, or do they want to be more creative and maybe go into the parts that I like more like almost towards data art almost, and that will, I think, help you figure out maybe the tools that you will need to learn. So if you were more into dashboarding, you could either go in towards the Power BI or Tableau things. For data journalism, then there are things like Data Wrapper or Quadrogram and Raw. But if you want to be, if data viz is really the thing that you want to do and you want to be interactive, then I don't think there's any way around D3 at the moment. Mm-hmm. Or if you want to be more graphical, then you could maybe stick with Adobe Illustrator. Regardless of all of that, I would say that they need to be able to do data, like they would need to understand data. I'm not talking about like hardcore math, but the general statistics of understanding how to get like distributions, what kind of different distributions you have, what a standard deviation is, that you know the starting points of trigonometry, you know the sine and the cosine don't scare you anymore, and you know how to aggregate and change data sets. If something is in like across tabular format, you know how to make that into lines. So it basically comes down to almost like tidy data. I think that's a really good thing to Google on in terms of how learning how to handle data. So that part, and then figuring out kind of what kind of data visualization site you like, so you know which tool to focus on, and then really need to start making projects. Just make lots of projects. I mean, don't start too complex. Maybe first take an example that somebody else has made and plug in a data set that you have found and you want to see how that works for that data set, and then slowly maybe start changing the colors, maybe other parts of the style, so you get a hang of how your specific tool is working. What I also really suggest is not picking just some dry data set from some government website, because these are freely available and they're very easy to reach, but like I don't get excited from the population of every city in the Netherlands. But I do get very excited from like Lord of the Rings dataset. And I really want to dig into that. So for me, what has really helped is that I do my personal projects and I really start from a question that intrigues me. And I don't even know if the data is ready. And then if I have that question, I will see if I can find the data. And usually there are more ways than you think on finding the data eventually. And then you will, because the question and the data, and it excites you on a personal level, you are so much more enthusiastic to see it through to the end.
Well, tell more about that. What's the hardest data that you had to find, and how did you go about that?
Oh, let me think. So the hardest parts are actually doing it completely manually. So for example, for the Lord of the Rings ones, I found a data set that contained all of the words spoken by all of the characters and all of the scenes of all three extended editions of all of the movies. But I actually wanted to see like how many words have the members of the Fellowship spoken at the different locations throughout the movies. But location information wasn't in the data set. So I basically pulled the scripts from online and had, in my own memory, I've seen those movies I don't know how many times. So I just manually entered location information next to all of these as an extra variable. But in a completely different way, another data set that I wanted to get was also for a data sketches project, the topic was books. And I thought, well, books, in my fiction category of books, I'm a big fantasy fan. But I thought that doing something with my favorite writers wasn't necessarily allowed because these books are really like, I believe they need to be so many years old before the text becomes available. So I thought about fantasy books in general, and I've always felt that the fantasy book title is a very specific way of, it's always like The Swords of Avalon or something. It's very, it's very recognizable, I feel like, if you're talking about a fantasy book. So I wanted actually a data set of many different fantasy books, and then I could maybe analyze what are the themes in fantasy books and what is the structure of a fantasy book title. And so I needed these titles, but there was not a data set of like fantasy book titles in general, not that I could find. So what I actually did eventually was I went to Amazon, and Amazon has like a daily updated list of the 100 best-selling fantasy authors. And it's like 20 per page. And you can't download it, so I had to scrape it. So I wrote like a little scraper on R, like it's like 10 lines of code, and then I had a list of the 100 names. And then there is on Goodreads, they have a wonderful API, and that gives you a lot of information. So I basically put the name, the writer's name, back into the Goodreads API, again through some R package that makes the link to the Goodreads API, which was wonderful. And then I would request like the top 10 most rated books of each author, and then I would also because the data was available, I would also request like the average rating of each book and like how many ratings did each book have. So eventually I had a list of, cleaning up that list of books, I ended up with about 900 fantasy book titles that I could then finally use for my analysis.
Cool. That does sound like a lot of work. But and then what you produced out of that, what was your goal in that visualization? What, tell me more about the story you were telling at the end.
So this was a little bit more towards data art almost. So what I did was I did text mining on the fantasy titles, but that was quite difficult because the titles are really short. Some of them are basically just one word or three words. They're not very long, so it's difficult to make sort of like a document term matrix is the fancy word for it. But like you need to go from words to numbers, and then algorithms can actually see comparisons on similarity. So I did all kinds of different things. So I tried to find like to a text mining or a similarity kind of algorithm, the word wizard and witch are as different as the word wizard and orange, because they're both but for us it's like, yeah, it's both a magical being. So I tried to find these sort of hypernyms of the words to see if I could make wizard and witch the same word to the algorithm. Well, that totally did not work. Totally didn't work. So eventually I just manually kind of had like I will have like so many categories, like 40, 50 categories, and I will try and make each word fit within that. And then looking through that, I was like, okay, so then I did a t-sne on the sort of word combinations and which would place words that are often used together kind of in a similar location. So that was interesting to see how this sort of quilt of the different themes was spread out, which was fascinating to see that like light things, like good things, were often combined with evil, and really in a sense of like good meets evil in the book title kind of way. But other parts of that quilt also showed other things that make sense, such as battle and more things that relate to like how do you say that, like medieval kind of castle kingdom meets instruments like a lance. How that kind of flowed throughout this web of themes that, and then seeing what was on the opposite ends of the spectrum.
Interesting. That sounds like you're still doing a lot of play with DataViz, which is great. Do you feel like you're keeping consistent with the amount of play and how much fun you're having with DataViz outside of, because I mean, certainly you do it for a job, then it becomes, you know, it's a job a little bit, but you still, it sounds like you're still very much doing side projects and you feel very fun projects on the side.
Yeah. Yeah, really, like, I've always had this thing where no matter the data set, I'm always curious to figure out what, like, insights it can tell me that that nobody's found yet. And that quest, that curiosity really leads me in, and how the more personally I am attached to it is, that the more enthusiastically I'll keep on searching. So that really keeps me going. Although I also find, for example, with the projects, client or personal, but more on client projects, is that like 80% of my time goes not into that most fun part of figuring out the stories and making the first visual, but goes into making it interactive, making it more performant, fixing all the browser bugs, making it for mobile and desktop. Mm-hmm. And I have to admit, those parts are kind of are not as fun, to say it mildly.
and despite tools out there to make things easier, you know, even in those tools, it's not like automated. And certainly what you're doing is a whole, you know, abstraction beyond like the typical tools. So when you have, you know, someone getting into this, I mean, understanding that patience that it takes, what advice would you have for them when they're, if they getting into this?
I guess, again, for me, it was again the small step. So don't expect to be able to do everything at once. My first visuals, I think it took me 2 years before I started resizing my visuals or even caring about mobile. And so, you know, try and do as much as you can, but also be realistic and stop where you know it's a step too far for you at the time. I mean, all of these things, even doing the mobile thing, my personal projects, like 95% of them don't do anything on mobile. You just see, it's everything's like scaled down. That's it, because it's not something that I enjoy, so I only do it when I'm paid to do it. So it's, you know, try and keep it fun. Maybe on every project, like a personal project, I try and figure out one thing that I haven't done before, or maybe at the start it's like, oh, maybe I can try a different tool, a different angle, a different effect that I saw, and learn that, to keep the fun part in it, but don't go overboard. I mean, try and see it as baby steps, really, just to make sure that you're not, don't burn yourself out before you've reached that point where you're
epic like yourself. Well, and so one thing we were talking about earlier is because you have very extensive blog posts, with, you know, a lot of good information for folks that are looking for information on the thing that you're writing about. You're very exhaustive in that process, and it sounds like, you know, you got more internet famous, or however you want to call it, from your blog posts first, is what you were saying earlier, that then you know, the visualizations you're putting out there. So what drove you to, you know, because clearly that's a giving back, and you know, you're passionate about that. So what made you start doing that, or how did you decide to go about start doing that?
Yeah, so even like 3 years before I even ever thought of going freelance, and I was basically just flipping from data science to data visualization, and I was making these personal projects, and I would learn a very small thing, like how to make a dashed line animated. And I didn't, because I couldn't find a blog post out there that actually explained it to me. It took me hours to kind of piece together from separate websites and Stack Overflow questions. I thought, like, well, I now know how to do it. Might as well write a blog post about it and give back to the community. Because I would never have gotten, even then at that point in time, but especially now at the point that I'm at now, I would never have gotten there if I didn't have all of these examples, all of these Stack Overflow answers, and all of these blog posts that with people sharing learnings. So I really wanted to be able to, you know, add on to that. So I wrote these blog posts, and they're very specific, like making an animated dash line or making a glow or making text on arcs. So it's not, I don't have like an introduction to D3, that those people knew how to do those better. So I'm making these blog posts, and they kind of started getting picked up and being spread around. So that was a great way to sort of get started in becoming, where other people were becoming aware of my existence, and then the personal projects came on to that. And also just for the fact that I was learning along the way, so my projects hopefully started getting on, you know, a little bit better every time. And that combined from like my portfolio and my blogs together, that at some point people started reaching out to me. It's like, hey, can you do something for us? I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm not a freelancer, but... Eventually. So now I'm really happy that my past self put in all of that effort to make that happen, because once I started freelancing, I basically reply to emails. That's how I do my sales. People know how to find me, and then we take it process. From there. Yeah, I know, because sales is not my thing. So my form of sales is doing personal projects and broadcasting that and hoping that somewhere it'll stick and they will come and find me.
Well, that's awesome. Well, and just a few last questions we ask other guests, and you know, these are fun ones, so the hard questions are over now. Except for we're gonna ask you to do that karaoke. So if you were a data viz, what kind of data viz would you be?
Oh, I would be a beast form.
Okay.
Yes.
Why?
Because it is very manageable. I don't know if that's the right word. They can take on many shapes without losing the sight of the lowest level of detail. So you're still showing every data point. You're still showing all the context, which I hope. I mean, I'm always an open book. I feel like at least people tell me that I am. So it's like it's showing all everything that it's got, but it's also, it can go in many different directions. And I feel like, at least that's what I hope to do, always having an open mind. And,
nice.
And seeing things.
That's a good one. Cool. So storytelling is such a big, important point of things. And even when you're doing your visualizations, you obviously, you put a lot of text behind it, but then you talk in these you know, whether at IO or we did at the meetup group, mm-hmm. Certainly you're telling a story. Who's your favorite storyteller of all time? It doesn't have to be something in data viz related at all.
So for me, I guess that would be Brandon Sanderson, which is my favorite fantasy book author. More in a sense that he can make me forget that I'm reading. I feel like my eyes are at the moment constructing a movie in my head while I'm reading, and I'm so sucked into the stories that he makes. When I listen to his audio books, while I'm running, I might just, you know, start laughing, which is really weird when you have people coming from the other side and you suddenly start laughing and I can cry. And he captivates me with stories. And I sometimes try and see how he does that by trying to deconstruct the sentences or see his style, but I fail in that horribly, and I just get sucked in back into the story again.
You do a pretty good job from what I've seen. Some of it's probably wearing off. But someone's trying to read more in this area, or, you know, whether listening to podcasts or books or whatever, where would you recommend them to go? What things are good things in this data space? And maybe it's just data visualization, since that's your focus.
There are some good, like, data visualization podcasts, such as Data Stories, mm-hmm. and is it DataViz Today? And then there's the Policy Fizz podcast. Mm-hmm. So those are interesting things if you want to have, like, a broad range of possibilities. I like books by Alberto Cairo, such as the Functional Arts specifically was one of my favorites. Also like the books like The Visual Display of Quantitative Information by Edward Tufte. And his other books are also great, but that one is particular one of my favorites. And I think, again, just having... another thing that's really good, I think, to go for inspiration is the Information is Beautiful Awards.
Yes.
So they have a showcase on their website for every awards, and the showcase gets whittled down to the long list, and it gets shorter to the short list, and then you have the winners. But just browsing the short list, and if you have some more time, the long list, mm-hmm. And just going through and seeing what other people have made throughout like a year is so inspirational for me and coming up like in my next project. So usually I take about 30 hours to go through the long list.
Wow.
And then pin everything that I like.
Nice. Well, and so I got to say, because in 2017, am I right, that you were a winner? Yes, I thought so. What was the visualization that you're a winner for?
So 2017 was a particularly productive year. I won gold together with Shirley Wu for the Data Sketches project in the unusual category. I won silver for the a visualization I'd made with Zan Armstrong about when babies are born. It was called the Baby Spike, which we made for the Scientific American. And then on top of that, I also won best individual. Just for my general kind of the
yeah,
things that I made.
Yeah, and that's what I was thinking about, yes.
Yeah, yeah, so it wasn't for a particular one.
Okay.
Just in general, yeah.
Awesome.
That was so cool.
Yes. And then you're truly DataViz famous then at that point.
Yeah, nothing else to reach for. It's all downhill from there. Just basically stop.
Well, really appreciate getting to know you this week at here at IO, and look forward to finding you in different places around at different conferences. Open Viz has been on my list, and yes, maybe we'll see each other there. But hopefully you're back here at IO Festival next year too.
Yeah, I would love that.
So cool. Well, thanks. Have a great. And well, actually, last thing, of course, is how would people find out about you, get in touch with you? What's the best way to do that?
So I feel like a lot of database lives on Twitter. Me too. That's where I'm most productive, and so that's where I'm at Nadi Bremer. You should just look up how to spell that. I'm sorry, I have a difficult name.
And we'll put that in the show notes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So my website is visualcinnamon.com. Again, because of my weird name, I have like an easier website at least. But I'm also on Instagram, but not. But I guess through the website where you can email me, or definitely on Twitter are the two best ways to reach out to me.
Excellent.
The Data Able podcast is produced by Dave Mathias and Matt Jesser and made possible by Beyond the Data. At Beyond the Data, we are on a mission to help high-performing individuals successfully become champions for a more data-driven approach in their organizations. We believe that data science is only part of the equation. Getting value out of data requires building a culture that starts with you, is supported by executives, and trickles down to every facet of your organization. You can learn more about Beyond the Data and our approach at gobeyondthedata.com.